The Reserve Pool, Episode 26. Actions, actions, and more actions. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Reserve Pool. This is episode number 26, and we're happy to be here with you again another week. This is Dave here.
Katie.
And I'm Evan, and I apologize for shenanigans in my file last week.
Yeah, it's okay. We got it where it needed to be in the end, and we have, you know, the podcast up. Honestly, right now, a delay of a week is something that I needed. My life is full. There's a lot of good stuff happening. I'm not bragging or anything like that. It's just there's a lot of good stuff, but it's really keeping me away from other things that I want to do. So it's not really a complaint. It's just what's happening right now, and what can you do? I know this is life. We get busy. So no worries, Evan.
Yep. No, it's been pretty crazy for me, too. I've barely gotten enough time to play around with my ex, and this is why we haven't seen part two of the villains deck.
Yes,
the deck article, which we will see, soon.
That's awesome. Yeah, because we have this new set here, and actually, today, our recording day, we got home from visiting my in-laws this weekend, and there on the porch was our box with Uncanny X-Men. Booster tower inside. So I now have the starter. You guys saw that video. And now we actually, my wife and I, Lauren will appear in this one. My wife and I have a video going about what we unpacking everything. Don't worry, it's time lapsed. It won't take a year. And what we get and what we think and just first impressions. Because Lauren's a much lighter gamer than I. So she still loves it, but she likes different sorts of games from me. She would rather play Takanoko than like Eclipse or something like that, which I like Takanoko. But yeah, so different perspective. What do you guys think so far? This is, I mean, we got a lot of new stuff.
Well, I'll start off by saying, of course, the one game that Evan got in is also the one game that I got in. Evan had been thinking about his deck a little more, and I kind of pulled it off the shelf real quick. And I feel like there are a lot more options. Minus, of course, the new beast, Professor X recruiting young mutants, who really brought the whole thing together. So,
but I'll be honest, he doesn't feel as obtrusive as Beast does.
Yeah, because no. Beast really interferes with whether or not you can attack, how you can block, and certainly there are other characters that interfere with attacking and blocking, but he doesn't dominate it. By the middle of the game, Evan and I were just saying, and I do the thing. The thing being, of course, spending one mask energy to move two sidekicks to the prep area. And so, you know, that's how we announced it. It's like, I do the thing. or I do the thing twice. And so,
or three times in one occasion.
Did you get to do it three times?
Yes, I did.
I only got to do it twice. Anyway, so it was really a fantastic way of moving the game along without interfering with the attacking and blocking the way Beast did. Because that was all about, like, how can I get my beasts to block? How can I recycle them real quick? And, I mean, I didn't even field Professor X. I didn't need him. You know, yep. It was all about the global.
Yeah, no, there were. I actually had two characters, or I actually only brought one character, but there were two characters in, I think, the revised version of the squad that I'll be using. That I'm definitely going to have two characters in there just for globals, so.
And I'm not going to, oh my gosh. I hate Iron Man.
She doesn't actually hate Iron Man.
I love Iron Man as a character. I hate the Iron Man global because Evan did a nasty boy Iron Man combo. So every time one of my characters got knocked out, he's like, and it's a villain. And it's a villain.
That will hurt. Oh,
and,
my goodness.
Yeah, so I was, every time one of my characters was getting knocked out, well, not every time, but many a time when my characters were getting knocked out, I was taking one damage even though I had blocked them. On the plus side, we did manage to end the game 6-0 life-wise with me losing. But it was pretty tight.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, you know, to touch back upon what you said with Professor X.
I think it was 10-0, but whatever.
No. I conceded, however, if I had attacked.
Oh, yes, that's true.
It would have. I conceded when it was 10-1, and I conceded because when I attacked, it was going to become 6-0.
There you go. So to go back and touch upon what you said with Professor X, what is substantially different about him, between him and Beast, is that Beast, especially if you're playing with somebody like my wife and I here, we would have liked to play together on that set a whole lot more, but we felt without proxying certain things, certain cards or certain dice, we wouldn't really have the opportunity to do what we wanted to do. Beast being in the starter set, there weren't enough Beast dice to go around, for one. For two, only one character got to benefit. But in this case, if one person has Professor X, they can both benefit. And I mean, for Scarlet Witch being able to re-roll dice, for example, maybe that's something both people want to include on their team. But you know what? I'm sitting here and I'm looking at 7 Scarlet Witch dice. That's probably enough for two people to split between the two of them. If one of us just wants to take the common and say, okay, well, this is actually the super rare. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, it's a lot easier in this set because we're not restricted by the same things that we were in the last set. I didn't get to play. I just unboxed everything. We didn't have the chance to play the starter set, but Evan, I like your villain team. I think it's right up my alley, and that's a direction that I know that I would like to look down the road too.
And honestly, I think there's a lot of variability that works for it, because the core is really just that Nasty Boy. And really, I think Nasty Boy and Pyro are the most important parts. Apocalypse is just a convenient big dude.
I think Iron Man is really a
necessity. Oh, yes. Iron Man is a necessity, but he's not actually someone you're going to be rolling.
Yes. Iron Man plus Nasty Boy really is the core of that team.
And I have my own fact talk question involving Nasty Boy. So
we'll have to get to that at some
point. We'll see that at some point.
Is that if Nasty Boy gets knocked out, do you do a damage or what?
Yeah. How does damage fall if Nasty Boy gets knocked out on the turn?
Yeah, well, we'll have to deal with that later. Tune in for a fact talk later.
I will guarantee, though, that now you having said that, we're going to get a whole bunch of comments in the video on the blog of people arguing one way or another. But I totally see the merit there. That's something we'll have to dig into. I haven't given it much thought. I like all this. I'm not going to spoil a whole lot about what's in the video. Just go watch the video. But one thing I will say is that from the Booster Tower, I have at least one more copy of every single starter set die. I have every uncommon that belonged to the starter set, that was a starter set character. And in fact, the only one that I didn't get two of, well, only ones that I didn't get two of, were Juggernaut, Magneto, and Quicksilver. Everything else I have a full play set of dice for, which is pretty sweet, especially in comparison to last time.
Yeah, I got two of everything. I got at least four of every die except Emma Frost, oddly enough, and Iceman.
Huh.
I'm down a Wolverine die, actually. But I feel like buying the booster box was both excessive and fulfilling, if that makes sense. There were a lot of extra cards, of course, and a lot of extra commons. I think I ended up with 8 of the common Jen Walters She-Hulk. And I was like, really? But I do love me some She-Hulk. Regardless, I feel like, you know, it really, if you want to have a complete set and you don't want to worry about filling out your collection while drafting, buy a booster box and then fill it out with a couple of individual rare buys.
Yeah, I mean, I have yet to hear from anyone who hasn't bought a booster box and not gotten a complete common and uncommon set.
Yeah.
I'm just shy of a complete uncommon set, I believe, actually. So let me be the first. But you know what? I haven't like actually looked too close to understand what it is that I'm missing. I just know I'm missing something. But I'll tell you, though, I have enough of extras of things that I will be more than able to trade with people for things that I do not have.
Yeah.
I have a few. I even have like one or two spare rares, extra uncommons and so forth. But I'm very, very pleased with the set that I have here. And I'm going to just throw up an early nomination for favorite die, Emma Frost. looks awesome.
I have the gnarliest Emma Frost dye. It looks like a dog ate it. it really does. I feel like I should post a picture and put it on the blog.
I would like to see.
It will have to be the cut jump picture for this one, because it is the gnarliest dye I've ever seen, and it was truly impressive how beat up it was. All the rest of them were fine, but this one dye really does look like the dog got to it.
Yeah,
all of my dice look great. Like, I don't have a dud.
As for me, I think it was just some of my vision dice got into their grandfather's Pym particles, because they are, like, noticeably smaller than every other die, and even one of the other vision die. Like, one vision die is normal, and then I have these three vision dice that are just tiny.
I actually and, have like, to throw in
weird and rounded.
I have to throw in a slight concern that I noticed while I was looking at the dice before Evan and I got up to play, which was you can put from the box I got. I had 8 sidekick dice that were sufficiently smaller than the character dice that I could tell which ones were which in the bag.
Wow.
And that is, I did not take advantage of it, or else I possibly would have won. But it was a concern to me, because the sidekick dice, some of them are smaller and very well rounded on the corners in comparison to the character dice, which tend to be very sharp at the corners. And you could fairly easily differentiate them. Yeah, which is actually a concern that I had as soon as I looked at them. I said that could be a concern for play, for competitive play.
I actually have a couple. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, just kind of like a shuffle cheat, only dice.
I use the AVX sidekick dice, full disclosure. So
there you go. I actually have a couple concerns the other way, where I noticed this so far with Iron Man and Pyro. The dice are more noticeably crisply formed than others. I feel the edges are a bit more defined and so forth, where I might be able to feel those. I also think Angel is in that realm. But at the same time, if I'm just going through a bag and trying to pull out 4 die real quick, I don't know. Now, would I question it if somebody was spending a long time digging through their bag to get 4.
If someone's got their hand down there for like 10 minutes.
But if I'm just kind of digging in 4 dice, here we go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then fine. But I would definitely question it if people were taking a long time to dig those out.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So, but overall, color me impressed. I don't have anything. We noted in the last set how our Venoms looked pretty shoddy. I don't have any die that I would call shoddy in this one. Not at all. None. Everything looks great.
I'm telling you, my Visions did not eat their Wheaties.
Yeah, they're the same size as the Psychic dice. I actually looked at my Visions, and they had some of them had the same problem that you were talking about.
Yeah, but as a whole, I don't think that's going to matter a whole lot. I'm just looking at this to my left on the table here, and this I have so many things. Katie, you're right. It feels excessive and yet awesome. I know that I have enough that, especially Lauren and I, could build a couple of competitive teams and play against one another, and that's as important as anything else, because it's not always easy for me to get to the game store, especially recently, where I've moved to a new location for work that's less convenient to the store that I frequent, much less convenient actually. So it's funny, it's the same drive for me, but it's the direction's different enough that it would be attack on an extra 15 minutes to get to the store.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But this looks great. But there's another aspect of this set that we're going to talk about today at length, and that is the basic actions. So what do you guys say we move forward into the feature topic?
Oh, we should talk about, while we move into them, we should actually bridge this topic a bit.
Bridge. Bridge away, sir.
I do not like the colors they chose for the basic actions.
Okay, yes, let's talk about that. That's great. I love it.
I feel like this really, you have to start with this. I mean, Evan, I'll leave his additional
my particular
comments.
Complaint.
Yeah, well, you should hit your particular complaint first, I think.
Yeah, so I've got a touch, you know, the normal, a common amount of red-green color blindness. Like,
which is fairly common for men.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's nothing like I cannot distinguish colors. I am not like the dog of vision where everything's in shades of gray or whatever. But, you know, sometimes when things are kind of reddish or greenish, it's a little hard to tell what color things are, where they blend in a little. And just the brown and the orange and the purple and the pink, it's like, sometimes I just can't tell which color is what. Like, I consider, okay, these are probably either purple or pink, but maybe that's brown, or maybe it's purple, maybe that's orange, and... It's just like, it took me a good few minutes. I tried to separate out my my action dice from the new set when I was putting all my dice into their beating box, and it took me a couple of minutes to distinguish which were which for the basic actions. And I was like, I'll try putting pink with brown and purple with orange because those are the most dissimilar, so I'll be able to tell them apart.
Yeah.
So this has just led to me using the green, red, yellow, blue for AVX instead. Those are nice and clear.
And I am not colorblind. And I have difficulty distinguishing the orange, pink, and the brown, purple from each other. I was really surprised about the color choices just because they are so similar that it really hurts the visibility and the ability to distinguish in those pieces. I was just surprised, really, because I did feel like it was problematic, difficult to be able to tell exactly what was what.
Well, I'll say this. Well, first, I too have the same issue. In fact, if you could really slow down the time lapse that I used when I was sorting out the dice in my video with the starter set, there were a couple of times when I had to like give it a look and say, oops, nope, that one goes here and this one goes there. It's not easy, and it's worse in lower light. Though actually, I find that in lower light, I have trouble distinguishing different ones than I do in fuller light, which is a completely different problem. But you guys are totally right. Now, in defense of the color scheme, we already had the primary colors there, and they wanted to make this so that other people could get involved. So I guess I understand that. I'm not sure what else. I mean, purple and orange were probably a good choice. I don't know about pink and brown. I'm trying to remember now
white
what we had
and
last time.
Black? I mean...
Well, but then you got sidekicks. Then you really got to look at it and say, wait, is this a sidekick or is this a basic action? But you're right. Well, that's true. The symbols.
They actually have different symbols on their side, so it shouldn't be an issue.
That's true. I don't know. Purple and orange, I see. I don't know so much about pink and brown. What do we have to this point? Green, blue,
yellow,
red,
and the primary colors.
Yeah,
and
yellow.
Green.
So yeah. I don't know what else they could have done that was wholly different. I don't know if I like black and white personally, but I see this
silver,
as an issue too.
Silver and gold. Well, and actual gold as opposed to yellow is technically gold.
Right. Yep. Well, kind of like a Vegas. Yeah.
Regardless, I did have some issues with that, and again, I don't have any, even a touch of color blindness.
You are not a man and do not have the red green color blind.
Correct, and I had a good bit of trouble distinguishing the two sets, as I said.
Yeah,
but again, minor quibble.
No, you're right. I'm not colorblind in any way, and I had to give it an extra look. So just be aware of that. And personally, I'll probably continue to use the older ones, though. There's nothing wrong with the new ones. Just go with orange and brown or something like that, and you'll probably have an easier time. But it depends on you and what spectrums you can see.
So on that note, now that we've talked about something fairly innocuous when it came to the basic actions, let's actually talk about the actions.
Let's. So we're going to look over these in alphabetical order here, from ambush to transfer power and everything in between, and just kind of give some of our quick impressions. And then in the end, we're going to talk about what we think of the basic actions as a whole. We will make sure that we read off the cards for you so that if you don't yet have this or don't have it at hand when you're listening, which you might not if you're like drive time or something, please don't look at the basic actions while you're driving the car.
Don't dice and drive.
Yes, there we go. So let's get it started here with the basic actions. The first one is ambush. It is 3 cost. One of your characters gets +1 attack for each character your opponent has in the field. No bursts or anything. That's just straightforward what it is. So ambush actually is one I hadn't thought a whole lot about to this point. I don't yet know how I like it, because you have to be outnumbered for it to matter.
Yeah, I mean, I think where it's going to really shine is people who can trample, or the equivalent of trample. But, oh no, there's none of that. I don't think there's any of those in this set.
Yeah, no. I mean, I feel like the only time that's going to be of real use is, like, a time when you're attacking and your opponent has a lot of stuff that they don't want knocked out, and so you get to pick a character that gets beefed up to KO it. Or
if your opponent has a lot of guys, you can play this, give one of your guys a huge bonus. If you know, if your opponent's playing the weenie deck, do that, and then you play like one of the other basic actions that you'll talk about, or a Cyclops or something, kill all the other, or knock out everything else, and send your huge guy in unmolested.
No, yeah. I just realized what this is for. I could have used it when I was fighting you, because I had plenty of unblockable stuff.
Right.
I was able to send sidekicks through unblockable. I was able to, I took the Kitty Pryde that is unblockable on her first turn, and you use them, you pay the... you use the ambush die, and, you know, you have five guys out. I get plus five attack. You buff up these weenies, these unblockable weenies. So I think that's what this card is for. I kind of wish I had one in my deck now that I'm thinking about it.
Well, you know where else this could be used with is the Wolverine superhero from the starter set. When fielded, Wolverine may pair up with a different heroic character, obviously. When he's paired up, he and his partner can only be blocked by two or more characters each. So depending on the setup, this might be a time to where you could use that. And as you say, some of the unblockables there, too. Yeah, okay. I see the merit.
Sneak some in around the side or such.
Or in general, just any deck where you're likely to be able to get guys in unmolested on a regular basis. Weenie decks could also use it. I mean, they don't say number more that your opponent has. You can just be like, well, you have three guys. I give one of my two twos a +3/+3, and they do more damage. Because you can't block everything I have.
Yep.
Very good. All right. Well, we're making progress here, then.
Though, I guess with that one, you can't... Would you be able to actually use it after blocking has been declared?
Yep.
I don't think so, so...
Nope. Yes, you can. You can
you can. You can yes, you can, because it's your turn.
You want.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just making sure.
Yeah. No, it should be fine.
Yeah.
So that's very what cool. It's there for. I would definitely... We've got a couple of unblockable characters, or ways that you can make characters unblockable. I basically made an unblockable themed deck, you know, if I'd had an ambush, I could probably have buffed up some of them. In general, it's smaller characters that are unblockable, so lets you beef up some of those smaller characters.
Yeah, I see it. Even Angel flying high, if you have a shield themed team, when Angel attacks, all other shield characters must be blocked before Angel dice can be blocked. I see the options here now. It could work. Especially against a weenie rush. All right, so let's then move on to Enrage. 3-cost basic action. Choose a character. That character must attack at its next opportunity. Spin that character up one level if able. In global, pay a bolt. Give one character +1 attack. So that's pretty cool. Actually, I look at it and I think of the Enrage effects that you might see in a raid in an MMO, and that's kind of what it is.
Yep. I like it. There's a few characters that, you know... let them do stuff if they spin down. You may have noticed I'm partial to Apocalypse Time of Trials or Time of Testing. He spins down when he gets knocked out. He spins down and comes back when he gets knocked out with Enrage. You can just spin him back up and repeat the process.
Yeah, and he's so beefy at his higher levels that his must attack is hardly.
You're probably doing that anyway, and especially with him, and if he gets knocked out, he just comes back. Oh, no.
Can I say, I want to be the first to say that if you turn the Apocalypse die upside down, it looks like a cat wearing headphones.
Oh, someone else said it looks like Bob Ross.
I can see that too, but I'm going to go with a cat wearing headphones because the internet loves cats. No, you're totally right.
Happy
and of course,
little trees.
We have the global here too, which is a lot like the one on Invulnerability from the last set, right?
Yeah. And that's a solid plus. Global.
Yes. Yes, it is. Tried and tested. I like it. It has good interaction with characters.
Yep.
Kid tested, mother approved.
Yep. So, and since we're trying to be polite, it's pay a bolt, and the character will get +1 attack.
Yep.
All right. Our next basic action is feedback. Deal 1 damage to your opponent for each of the characters that is knocked out for the rest of this turn. I was joking with Evan earlier because he brought this card and it says deal 1 damage to your opponent for each of his characters that is knocked out for the rest of the turn.
Immunity.
And I was like, okay, so apparently I am immune to that damage.
I was not having that. I am not willing to take their gender terms and insensitivity as literally.
See, it should say your opponent, not his.
It should.
Or even
You're
just
right.
There. Well, I don't know why people don't use there.
Anyway, I do think it's a good card, and one combo I was eyeing it with was Quicksilver, thanks to the Isotope E, which pretty much KOs sidekicks whenever he comes in. And so you field Quicksilver, do the feedback, and deal a lot of damage if somebody's leaving sidekicks out.
Yeah, and I mean, there's anything really that just pokes a whole bunch of people. I actually I actually took it with my Nasty Boy deck because
you were.
It's all about knocking people out and doing other horrible things. So
you just get a little bit of extra oomph.
Yeah, it's all about nickel and diming people to death with 1 damage.
Because Evan is a jerk.
Yep. That's pretty much exactly the way it is.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a whole lot to say about this card. It will definitely fit in with other decks. I mean, it synergizes as well. That's pretty much all there is to say. The wording could be better. I'm with you there. I don't know. I will say this. I don't know. The picture is cool. I don't know what it has to do with feedback specifically. But I like this kind of like somebody on a field of dead bodies and skulls and... Yeah.
Who is that?
I don't know. It makes me think of one of the endings of Twisted Metal 2 for the PlayStation, where the guy wanted to be king and he ruled over a dead world. And that kind of looks like Calypso in the background. They're going, ah, ha, ha, ha. That was a good game. It's not Calypso, though. It might be. Crossover. They do it all the time.
I mean, yeah, I feel like this is one of those cards that you're going to bring in when you have... a focus on, do 1 damage to many things or, one of those direct damage dealing cards where you know that you're going to kind of plow out a lot of characters. Hey, pair it with Wanda. Wanda Maximoff, which she deals a bunch of damage to X-Men when she's fielded if you have other villains. Every time she's fielded, you're going to be, probably KOing a couple of X-Men. Pretty nasty in combination with that.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it is the Uncanny X-Men set, so it's at least a vaguely safe assumption that your opponent will probably bring 1.
I brought 2.
I would have had 2, even though I wasn't actually playing even though I was playing a villain deck.
Yep. Our next basic action is Imprisoned, which is this die captures any number of opposing characters with a total fielding cost of 2 or less, and this effect lasts until canceled or you damage your opponent. Return the captured die to the field.
Yeah, we've talked about this.
Yeah, this one's crazy. We've talked about it before. It costs 4. It's pretty good. We're talking about slurping up, like, all of your opponent's sidekicks, like, at all of its zero, like, all of the 0 fielding cost characters that they have out, and, 2 ones or a 2, you There's a lot of low fielding cost options in
or
this
even
set.
Just, you know, or even just twos. It's no longer like the big guys or threes. There's a lot of beefy twos.
There are a lot of beefy twos. And
Apocalypse.
You know, Apocalypse,
yes. I was
just going
to say.
So, you know, you're talking about, I mean, you're slurping up a lot of characters. I had a lot of weenie characters in mind. You know, I was relying on Sidekicks and Kitty and Falcon and Angel. All of those have zero fielding cost sides. They could all be imprisoned, and your opponent just gets to sit on them until he or she is ready to trample you.
Yep.
Yeah, and you know, this is one of those moves where you could wait the whole game to make it happen, and it never does, but maybe if you do it well. But you could ambush and then imprison, and if it might be enough to knock out your opponent, depending on what's going on. But yeah, it's a cool card. It gives you a lot of options. It's something to worry about for sure.
Yeah, and I think it's especially, it's one of the things that will make rush decks who just want to swarm you with tons of cheap characters, it's something that's going to give them a bit of a pause.
You'll have to have a backup plan, if nothing else.
Yep.
Yeah. Our next one is Possession. It costs 4, and at the start of your attack step, take control of an opposing character with a level lower than one of your characters. Attack with it. If it has the double burst face, you can and take control of an opposing character with an equal or lower level. So you can basically take control of any character whose level matches or is lower than your highest level character.
Yeah, well, I mean, Possession is, you know, 9/10 of the law. it's womp womp. It's a good card. I don't like that it costs 4, but you know, it'd be a good way to snag a character who you punch through to your opponent with, or.
Or honestly, if you just are kind of running even on the number of characters, now you have a 2-character advantage. Mm-hmm. And you're taking probably their largest character, or at least the largest you can manage to snag out of the play. So hopefully you'll have the ability to swing that into your camp some.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. You're totally right. I can't add anything to that at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good card. I think it's
a little expensive. I might have seen it as a 3.
Yeah. I was going to say, what do you think of the cost, though, exactly?
Yeah, I mean, I just said, you know, I don't like the cost of it. It's not a useless card, but I don't feel like it directly synergizes well with anything. Like, it's good standalone, but I don't feel like it really combos well.
No.
Unlike all the rest of them, where I was like, oh, yeah, you could totally play that with this card. I just don't see that with this one.
Moving on, our next one is Reckless Melee, which costs 3, and its ability is to deal 1 damage to each character, including yours. If it has a star burst face, you instead deal 1 damage to each player. If it has the double star burst face, it's instead deal 1 damage to each player and 1 damage to each character. Hi, I'm Reckless Melee, and I really want to be Force Bolt.
Yeah, Force Beam.
Force Beam, yeah. Power Bolt, Force Beam, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting card. Again, I feel like it combos better with, you know, things where you want to knock out characters, but at the... I don't know. I don't like it that much.
I'll be honest, also, I think we're seeing mainly beefier characters...
Yeah.
Well, we're seeing beefier characters, though. We're also, like, overall, I feel like we're seeing beefier characters, but we're also seeing offensively beefier characters. So, you know, 2 damage, it'll knock out some pyros and, you know, other junk like that. Mm-hmm. So, it's not that bad, but...
How about pairing this one up with the uncommon Red Hulk, a.k.a. Rulk? While he's active, when an opposing sidekick is knocked out, your opponent loses 1 life. No matter how many Red Hulk dice you have fielded. Now, you have to have this out, and this has to roll double burst, but maybe you have Scarlet Witch, and she gives you the extra roll. You know, that could be pretty damaging there. I like pairing it up with things like that. Of course, you think about the Hulk in the old set. But I like the double burst face on this. I like the potential that it has if you can get it there. And I know Red Hulk is expensive, and you have to take the time to buy Scarlet Witch, and you have to take the time to buy this, but... You know, again, we have the means to do that now, thanks to things like Professor X to speed up the game for us.
still feel like it would pair better with, like, Quicksilver, thanks to the isotope E. You know, you're less...
When fielded, he deals one damage to each opposing psychic. Yeah, that's probably better, because then you have a character to work with Ralk, because then it's a character.
Yep, and characters block stuff.
Yeah. On the other hand, a sidekick that's in the field is not one that your opponent can use Professor X to grab. So it's really that kind of risk-reward thing, as it so often comes down to in this game.
Yep.
Yep.
All right. Next up, we have Relentless. Spin this die to a generic energy side. Reroll a character or sidekick die from your reserve pool, a four-cost basic action. The global is pay a mask, and target character cannot block. So, a couple of different things happening here. That global is enticing, but it could just as easily bite you in the backside as it could help you. You know, that's always the case, but especially here. But I like the option to spin this one. If you get this, if this comes up, you get to reroll something else. You have another shot to get something you wanted. Plus, you get the two generic energy from this die.
Yeah, and I think that sort of justifies its four cost, though I kind of like to see it be three. Four is still a little expensive, though I guess you can kind of get four energy out of it, sort of. Not really.
Huh. I feel like what... I kind of like the super rare Wanda a lot more. You know, she lets you reroll the third time all the time, not just when this pops up on a action face.
And you don't have, and you know, it's the same four to buy. You don't get the two energy out of it, but, or you could just use, well, you can't if you want the ability.
But you can, you know, but you can use it any time, as opposed to this when, I mean, say your nasty boy swings back around, you don't necessarily want it to come around just when you have a relentless die to go with it. Scarlet Witch, you get three rerolls regardless.
And or worse, or quote-unquote worse, what happens when you get, like, three things and relentless, and your three things roll what you need, and then it's like, thanks, relentless, you did nothing. It's, well, you know, you bought a two energy die, okay.
Yeah, this is probably best when you have the... when you have the sidekick or something like that out there as well, because you know you want to have some kind of reroll fodder for it. But perhaps you use him in a time when you have, or you use this at a time when you have Professor X. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
To fuel those sidekicks.
I don't think it's terrible, but it definitely will have its uses. But I'm not. It is not the most exciting of the basic actions we have this time.
That's fair.
Yep. All right, next up we have Selective Shield, which is choose an energy type. Characters of that type cannot attack until your next turn. On the double burst, you also choose one character of that type, and that character cannot block until your next turn. It also has the global, I forget which one it was on last set, but global pay fist target blocked character deals no damage.
Smash, I believe.
Smash. I like it, but I also feel like it's more to punish people who, for example, do a very heavy bolt deck or a very heavy, you know, fist deck or something. It really is a little selective.
It is.
Which is in the name, so I guess.
Well, hey. I think that's okay, because we talked about in prior episodes how there are more reasons to have a energy-focused teams in this set. So that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's not bad. It's just kind of one of those ones where, like, you could be good, but it would be hard for me to justify bringing it before I saw my opponent's deck, which you don't get to do.
Except the issue is that your opponent, at the very worst, you're going to be able to take out, you know, two of your opponent's characters. Like, I don't think there's a way that they can somehow manage to not have less than two of
any given energy type, yeah.
Yes, it's impossible for them to have fewer than two of any... like, there's no type that they have less... They have... You know what
I'm trying to say. I think everybody else will too. Yeah, no, you're right.
If you have eight characters, no matter what you do, at least two of them are going to be of the same energy type.
Yeah.
So say the pigeonhole principle or something.
Yeah, I mean largely you're going to be doing it based on what they have on the field. You know, they might find themselves in a situation where the only things they have around are. They might find themselves in a situation where the only thing they have around is bolts or something, mm-hmm. and you can just say, okay, well, none of them can attack, and that one can't block,
yep.
which would be pretty good. But I think, again, it's one of those things where some of the problems with actions are there are very few of them that I go, like, man, that would be cool to get just because, or, any time. I mean, Imprison fits that. You know, no matter when Imprison came up out of my bag, I'd be like, yeah, Imprison. But the rest of them, I'd be like, oh, darn, I got it, but I don't have Quicksilver this turn. Or I got it, but I don't have Rolk out. You know, that sort of thing. And it's kind of like,
Yeah, well, and that's the problem that we talked about with the basic actions in general from the very first episode where we talked about them, is that sometimes you can spend a lot of time waiting to get everything that you want at the same time. Just now you have to make sure that you use the tools that you have at your disposal to help put those odds in your favor, whether that's Scarlet Witch, whether that's making sure that you are fielding characters that you don't want to have in your bag, not just because you want to have them fielded, things like that. And I think as you can start to work those things in your favor, take advantages of the abilities that let you move those into your favor, you're going to have a better chance of that. But you got to take the opportunity, the win that's in front of you. You cannot wait the whole game hoping you get these two or three things out at the same time, because it might not happen.
Yeah, completely true. I guess that's the thing that I'm looking at when I see all of these, is like most of these, you really almost need them to come out with something else around, and that is really rough.
Yep.
It's sometimes hard to wait for the moons to align or the stars to be right or the Lovecrafts to come together, you know.
The sun and the moon and the stars.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, so, I mean, decent card, but again, one of those ones where it's like, I want it to come around with other stuff.
Fair enough.
Next we have Take That, Villain. Deal 3 damage to a villain, and on the double burst, deal an extra 1 damage to that villain.
Yeah, this is, I mean, honestly, with one of the premier villains being Nasty Boy, this just seems like a terrible idea.
Yeah, it's a little, too little, and again, I mean, I guess the only time I'd be really into it would be, say, for example, to KO Nasty Boy, assuming that wouldn't deal a damage to me. It's just one of those ones. It's our only real direct damage, other than the spray that is Reckless Melee, and it's limited. It only affects maybe a third or 2/5 of the deck. Set, and I mean, it's good, but at the same time, 3 is a kind of a low number. Let's just say 3. You know, 3 is a little low. You're probably not going to KO some of the bigger stuff. And given that Nasty Boy looks like it could be a meta-defining card, you don't want to give yourself even... I mean, Take That, Villain would KO your own... almost, you know, most of your own villains.
Maybe.
It's one of those
things, if you have Nasty Boy out, you have the ability that lets you deal 3. You pick a guy to take 3 damage, and your opponent takes a guy to pick 3 damage. So you can just use, like, you don't even need to take that villain. You can just use his ability. It's a little expensive, but it's possibly less trouble than going and getting the basic, getting the basic action die and having that
come up.
Yeah,
so it's one of those ones where it's cool, it's interesting. We have a lot more villains. It's not, Mjolnir levels of, shattered Earth. I think it's one of those ones where I'm not sure who wants to bring it. Like, if you put take that villain into your deck and you like it, I kind of want to know what you're doing with it. Because it kind of confuses me.
Well, I remember, too, though, with Iron Man, everybody can be a villain as well.
It's true,
villains, but with the arch-villain mechanism and other things like that, this could be a time where I want to take advantage of this arch-villain that I have, but my opponent just has that one villain there. Well, bam, you know, take them out. There are a few that it can get. Certainly not every one of them. But there are ways to take care of that there. I agree, it's not like perfect, and I would like to hear too from folks who are using it with a lot of success, but yeah, I don't know. All right, Evan, take us home.
Okay, the final basic action in Uncanny X-Men is transfer power. For 3 energy, you can roll a character die from your use pile. If it rolls a character face, field it at no cost. Otherwise, place it in your bag. It has the global, pay a shield, swap the attack value of one of your characters with that of one opposing character. So, I like this one.
I love this one.
It's cool.
It's one of the basic actions that I really enjoy. It has some shades of Ghost Rider from the last set, where you're trying to you could recycle things that you just bought.
Right.
Because your just bought things did not go to the subway. AKA that place where stuff goes when you use them to purchase things. And, you know, so you can either maybe get it straight out or at least put it back in your bag before, which is good. I mean, this is just one of those cards where, like I said, no matter when I got it, I would like to have gotten it. Just like in prison. It's one of those ones where it doesn't have to be at the exact right moment. Just whenever it comes up, it's good. It's kind of like, you know, Power Bolt from the last one. It's like, sweet, 2 damage. You know, it doesn't matter when it shows up. It's, you know, at the very worst, you can just, you know, punch your opponent for 2 damage. And I like it.
And on top of that, the global is actually kind of interesting.
It is.
Yeah, a lot of bait and switch here.
Yep. Yeah, no, I like it too. I mean, it's one of those ones where you know, get an opportunity to turn your, you know, sidekick into swap it with, like, your opponent's Apocalypse. It's like, oh, yay, now it's a 7 attack sidekick. Again, you know, you could really use that in the deck I was using that lost.
Yeah, and you can use it defensively as well if your opponent's unblocked.
Nope. Actions go off the field at the end of the turn. You can't use it defensively.
You can use globals, Kate.
Oh, sorry, I was talking about the global. Yes, I'm sorry.
Sorry. No, it's my fault. I misunderstood.
Yeah. No, I totally see. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a decent, like, defensive, like, oh no, you know, that you're able to maybe KO something your opponent didn't think was on the table to KO, which can be a real shock. You're just like, oh yeah, by the way, that character that you really wanted to keep around, now gone.
Remember that we had this global here? Yeah. Because, you know, sometimes those do fall into the periphery, and it's easy to let that, you know, get left.
I will say, in the game we were playing, I did really feel very focused on characters. I mean, most of the time I didn't even look at the basic actions, just because I knew what, you know, I need to get out another Pyro, and I want to get out some Mystiques, because, oh man, she's going to be like 6-6 now for basically peanuts, and...
There are... I did also feel a focus towards the characters,
which is good. Marvel Dice Masters, not basic action Dice Masters.
Yeah, so I do feel like that's interesting, but it's one of those ones where I become more and more like, when are you using actions? What are you bringing? How do you keep your basic actions from messing you over with what you bring? You know, so it's one of those ones where I'm curious, because I remember last iteration during AVX, there were, except for when it came to invulnerability and a cheap energy die, I was using them for the globals.
Distraction.
You know, I was using them for globals, not for actions.
Yeah, so let's move into that then. Like, everything that we have here, our big problem in the last set was that, like, the cost of buying things and everything else, especially when we compared to the fact that, you know, you had a lot of characters that were very cheap that everybody wanted to make sure that they bought, and maybe you want to get this basic action, but when are you going to spend the time and energy to buy it? How do you think that that's working out here?
I didn't buy a single basic action in my first game.
Neither did I.
And
really?
Yeah. I mean, we didn't touch them. We were too busy slugging each other to unconsciousness.
And I have to say, and this is even with heavy, heavy use of the thing.
Of
Professor X's ability.
We didn't touch them. You know, our energy went to fielding characters, buying characters, fielding characters, buying characters, and fielding characters.
Yeah, because it feeds, and I think it's going to partially be like how your opponent responds, because if they're putting out a lot of characters, you need to put out a lot of characters to, or have some sort of solution to a lot of characters. You know, maybe it's a Cyclops or something.
Yeah.
But you need to be doing something to prevent them from getting through. So you have to field more characters, and that gives you less time to pick up these basic actions.
Wow. I guess that makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah.
Perhaps if you're starting with some of the blank, you know, like the Ant-Man and so forth.
Yes. Yeah, so I have to say, spoilers. Spoilers for the villain deck article. My deck did in fact include the blank Kitty Pryde, and still.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like you didn't need it.
I think she was helpful, but I'll get into this in the article.
Yeah, yeah.
See, but here's what I think about these. I think that they synergize better with characters and things like that here, better than they did in the previous set. So I think that if you were going to build something around it, I think you have an argument and a justification for that now. I don't think you had that opportunity before, but I do think that that is the chance now with a lot of these actions where it could, in fact, be an integral part of what you have going on.
Yeah, it could be. I'm still, you know, I still want to play a little more before I make, like, I'm not saying basic actions useless, you know, but I feel like you need to, I need to play a little more and see if, you know, I say, Evan, you can't bring your stupid villain deck this time, you know, and just see if they play a part in different strategies.
Well, okay, that's fair. I don't know. Let me ask this, because I just looking at this and I just now realized the last set we had two non-basic actions here. It looks like Cerebro is the only one, right? I didn't miss something.
No, yes. just Cerebro. I mean, I feel like he doesn't, you know, count as much.
No, not at all. Cerebro is great because it gives us that tutor that we were clamoring for.
Yeah, so. I mean, in a lot of ways, I like it more than, you know, more than some of the basic actions, but you can't use it as a basic action, so you know, it doesn't enter into the meta the same way that your basic action choice does.
All right. Well, guys, this was a great discussion about a lot of new stuff. I am excited. I just keep, as a recording, I keep looking at my left and just looking at these cards spread out here.
And he goes,
you're
going to
roll around in a pile of dice?
Yeah. Going to have to get the bathtub ready. But I'm going to also need to get a new Plano box. That's for sure. Well, this is not going to fit in the old one at all.
I bought a new bead box. It is very huge. I alphabetized and put, like, different divots. Like, all the A's were in one, and then, like, Falcon and Emma were together alphabetically. And it worked really well. I feel like it's big enough, so.
That's what I just bought here.
I just bought a second bead box, same as the other one, except it's blue, and put all my AVX stuff in that.
It's a life choice. Yeah.
Yep.
I like all of this. I think they're all cool. Everybody, if you get the chance to get this, do it. If you've been on the fence, trust us. This is awesome. Especially because you get Cat wearing a headphones Apocalypse dice.
Absolutely. Or Bob
Apocalypse,
Ross.
Now doing Dead Mouse cosplay.
I see it.
Or
very nice.
Happy Little Trees.
Yeah, I think that Marvel Girl Upside Down, there's something there too, but I can't quite tell you what it is yet. So, all right, everybody, enough of that. I would also like to say that the broadcasting, the radio and podcast, because they podcasted to World, had a big loss recently. If you ever listened to the great show on NPR, Car Talk, even though they haven't done new episodes for a while, it's still on the air every weekend. Tom of the brothers there passed away recently due to complications from Alzheimer's. He is just one of the big forces in broadcasting. What a fantastic show that was. If you never listened to Car Talk, my gosh, the knowledge that they just have, whether you care about cars or not, and the humor that they put into everything was fantastic. So I recommend giving it a listen. If you were a fan of that show, this week's podcast is nothing but a tribute to Tom, some of his funniest moments and everything like that. And he was a guy who loved to laugh. So give that if you didn't know, or if you did, that episode was up, if you didn't even know that he passed away, check that out. But I have to give a little tip of the cap to them. I've listened to Car Talk ever since I was a boy, helping my dad out in the garage on a Saturday morning, and he would have that on. So I feel like that has to be said.
All right.
Well, hello.
Thank you for the closing remarks, Dave.
Absolutely. For everything else, thanks for spending time with us. This is Dave, and this is the Reserve Pool, and we have Katie and Evan, too, and we all say goodbye, right?
Goodbye.
I refuse to say no. Goodbye.
See you next time, guys.
Yep.
Absolutely.